Hi everybody, as you've heard, I'm from RPS MetOcean. My name's Greg Orange. I'm here to tell you a little of the experiences of our new storage system with DMF as the centrepiece. We have four IT staff, and we've all been involved in various stages of the project, but I've been mostly involved with the implementation and configuration of the new system. To give a bit of background, RPS MetOcean is a consultancy which provides oceanographic and meteorological services in support of coastal and ocean engineering and environmental protection. Our major business is around physical oceanography, along with some marine and local land-based meteorology. For over 25 years, we've been collecting, analysing and interpreting MetOcean data. Here's an image I showed you yesterday. This is some of our instrument technicians off the Northwest Shelf dealing with their instruments that we bring back to Perth. Sometimes we collect the data in the field, sometimes they're actually brought back into the office for our data to be stored on our systems. And this is a representation of some of that data, which is sometimes a direct representation, sometimes it's from our computational models. Management know our data. Senior management know the data is one of our biggest assets, so when we come to make strategic decisions about storage, we're confident we'll have support to make the right technology decisions. Our data comprises a few different flavours. Initially, the first type is just pretty standard office documents, which don't need any particularly special treatment. There's not a vast number or volume of them. Secondly, we have MetOcean data in a binary NetCDF format, and that data, as I mentioned, comes in from both our measurement programs and our modelling programs, and that is our large volume data, which does require special treatment, but thankfully each file is quite large, which makes for nice things like backup and storage regimes. And finally, we have a variety of source code from our developers and configuration data from our systems and parameters for models, lots of miscellaneous data files. Most of our data is on one file system, which has a decision that we keep coming back to thinking about changing, but the greatest reason for that is that our staff know where to find it all. There's a one port of call for what they need to access. There is obviously some problems with that, with various sizes and types of data that I've mentioned. We face them day to day, but each time we come back to it, the decision is business-based rather than technology-based, which I tend to think is the right, the right way to go. We would like to improve things a bit, and we have got some separate file systems for reference data and reference documents. And we also have a separate data management system for a small amount of our measured data. Our data grows, like any organisation. That's a graph over about a five-year period from 2004. You can see it's a geometric progression. There's a cap towards the end of those last three bars, which I'll talk about later. It's still growing. There was some limits on that. Late 2009, I think that graph finishes. You can't quite see the numbers. Oh, no, that's middle of 2010. One feature of our data is that we want to permanently retain it. We have data that's as old as the company and some of it even older from other sources, and we don't ever want to lose that. We also, when we have data stored not quite online, we want to be able to retrieve it pretty quickly. So that leads to some requirements of our systems that possibly not typical. Our previous system, which I've got a bit of a network diagram, you can see there's something called Tsunami in the middle there. That's our combined application and file server, which is everything. It runs our archive system, our backups, our main storage. It's the representation of our storage to everyone. Which leads to I/O contention and CPU contention. We've got pretty high load, and scaling has been pretty well non-existent for the past few years. Early on in its days, it was an amazingly powerful 4-core, I don't know, maybe 8 gigabytes of RAM machine. And of course, we, as everybody does, we ran out of capacity on that. It's backed by an EMC SAN, which is in that diagram. That started at a terabyte in 2004. By 2009, it was up to 16 terabytes and bulging at the seams. We have discovered that the performance is still pretty good, but scalability and cost have become quite prohibitive on that system, so we needed to replace it. So it came time to choosing a new system, and before we did that, we needed to decide what we wanted to achieve with storage. Unfortunately, we didn't quite finish deciding that before we started talking to potential vendors, potential suppliers. So the whole process took a bit longer than it should have. And some of the people offering us solutions probably should have dropped out sooner, because if we had have known what we wanted, they would have realised that they couldn't offer it. Those needs ended up being things like we needed large capacity, but not all of it needed to be high performance. So HSM is clearly the realm that we were heading towards. Retention is still one of our key requirements. So data protection of things like disaster recovery and oops backups. Also, we discovered a concept of sideways scalability. We decided that we're pretty sure we wanted a storage system that could scale in and of itself, and to improve its performance over time and performance for people using more and more people using different parts of it to add more servers. DMF turned out to be the best fit. It still doesn't seem to be perfect for what we need, but we're not sure if that's SGI or us who need to change the way we think a bit. Here's the system that we've ended up designing. That's thanks to David Honey from SGI. He put that diagram together. Most of our work is done on servers. So client workstations do email and web browsing. That's the vast majority of what happens out on the LAN. The other vendors were offering solutions comprised of several disparate systems or incomplete solutions or solutions that just didn't match requirements. So it came pretty clear that SGI was going to come out in front. And there was a big bonus that we were talking to people who really knew their gear. That was a big help in our purchasing decision. So we decided upon that system, and then we went to buy it. After all this time, we thought it would be quick, but the purchasing process took almost as long as the decision process. This was a frustrating time for us, because that tsunami, that combined application and file server, was crashing hard at that time. There was some hardware issues, which we still don't know the cause, and we were having some real trouble getting warranty support from an unnamed vendor. Now, that was... Our staff were coping okay with this because we were telling them, look, the new system's coming. It'll be delivered and bought any day soon. But at the same time, we were feeling pretty bad about providing poor service to our staff and losing hours of their work. So the day came close, and we cleared the ping pong table, ready for delivery, and then it all came in. There's Sashir with the new rack configuring away. The site install was next, and there were some challenges. We have a two flights of stairs getting up to our server room, and we were pretty gung-ho about dragging this 150-kilo rack up the stairs. So we had 10 fellas, including Sashil, roped in to help push this thing up the stairs. We got up the first flight, and it just wouldn't go any further. At which point we realised we needed some help. And just at that moment, one of the instrument technicians, who's used to dealing with heavy loads, and of course we hadn't bothered to ask anybody, came to our rescue. Now, I was actually talking to my father about this at a later date, and he's had 35 years experience with IBM doing site installs, and he told me that in his day you certainly wouldn't let the customer anywhere near the gear until it was fully installed. And I don't know if things have changed or if perhaps we were just so gung-ho that we didn't stop to ask anybody, not even our own staff who know how to work with heavy gear. So this is just another picture of the same ping pong table, and you can see over in the background there's a balustrade, and that's just at the top of the stairs. That instrument technician, he put together a magnificent rope and pulley system where it took two people to pull it upstairs at the final flight. And again, there's another picture of it all in place with that rack. There's the rack there on the right. And Paul Templeman, you can just see a fuzzy picture. He's the WA SGI representative who was also on site for the installation. And for that installation, we have a fairly tight server room. And you'll see that the new rack pokes out further than our old smaller racks. That's a side view. I've jammed myself up against the wall to take that photo, so I couldn't get all of the server room in the shot. And the rear of the racks. No surprises, it's a mess. So Sheil and Paul did a pretty amazing job putting it all together and getting it in there. Two of us had to do some pretty heavy physical work shifting two populated racks over to the side a bit to wheel in the near-populated new rack. But that was done happily, and as I say, Sashil and Paul did a magnificent job of getting it all installed. The SGI rack now looks as beautifully neat and tidy as we want the rest of the server room to look. Yeah?
You only have a 150 amp
supply there? There are... that's a 32 amp, a 63 amp, and another 32 amp. Sorry? Yeah. Each rack now has its own big breaker, because we discovered when we stepped over, I think it was 7 kVA UPSs, that you're not allowed to plug them into the wall by yourself. We learnt lots during that 2 weeks of site install, and Sashil trained us in using the various components of the ISSP. But there was more to come after he left and we started trying to use the system. So post-install, we had a SATA power supply. Apparently there was an issue, but we didn't experience it, but LSI notified us that there was a new power supply to be delivered. It was very simple. It was dropped on site. Paul Templeman came on site and helped me install it, so that was completely painless. ISSP... it was a whole world of learning for me. One particular note was that DMF is not a three-tiered capacity extension system. So we wanted to use really fast disk and slow disk to have lots of disk. Unfortunately, we kept reminding ourselves, and Sashil kept patiently reminding us, that no, the SATA is designed as a cache tier. And so we finally got our head around that. But it took a few times. Now, one benefit we have at the moment is that our current data volume fits entirely on the top tier. So for the time being, we don't have to tell any of our staff that, yeah, your data's nearby. Just try and touch it and you'll have to wait. We can just tell them to go ahead and use it. So that's been good for transition. When we get more comfortable with DMF and when our staff become more comfortable that their data really is available, even though it's not at their fingertips, we'll obviously be able to relax things because data volumes will grow. Our RAID volumes on the LSI SAN have been configured per recommendation for performance, which unfortunately has an impact on flexibility. There's no defragmentation available on an LSI SAN, on the one we've got. So if we ever need to recapture some gaps in free space that we might have freed up by dropping LUNs, then we actually have to wipe out all the LUNs after that LUN and start again. Now, I actually did this about 3 days after Sashil left, and this is why I had to learn so much so fast.
Did you do it on purpose or by accident?
On purpose. Because we decided we wanted slightly different sizes of LUNs. Yeah, no. We're very careful with interfacing with our storage. We've had a SAN for quite some time, and so logging onto the SAN interface, we're all sort of write down things as we go and are very, very cautious. Data migration. We needed to get our data from our old SAN to the new one, which we came up with a few ideas, but in the end, the best way that we came up with to avoid performance impact on the already crashing high load and frustrating old file server was to actually use our backup tapes, install the backup software on the new file server, and then restore onto that. And that worked beautifully. I was very happy with that in the end, after a couple of weeks of scratching our heads. And then we came across a CXFS bug, which started causing our file server to crash, which was truly tragic, because we just told all of our staff, look, we're on the new file server, you've got access to your files, there's going to be no more crashing, isn't it a wonderful time? And then the new file server starts crashing. Thankfully, email off to Sushil, help, help, what's going on? Bug was identified, SGI engineering got onto a patch release, and within 3 weeks of the notification of the problem, we had the new patch installed, and it's all, as far as I know, still working. Up to 11 days uptime now. My baby's really cute. Configuration felt quite difficult while we were doing it, while I was banging my head against this, all the various components of ISSP. But looking back, I'm pretty happy with how it all went, and I've written down enough as I went that I think I'll be able to go back and relearn what, if I need to. Choosing thresholds for DMF is, well, it's still a bit of a work in progress, because we only have 3.2 million files on our main file system, which by all accounts is pretty small for large file systems, but 2.8 million of them are small, and by small, 256 kilobytes. And so we have to work out how to manage that, whether we increase thresholds or what we can do about fixing that. One suggestion that I think it was you, Peter, who made yesterday is inode quotas, because of volume quotas aren't going to be very effective, but inode quotas could be a nifty idea to encourage our staff to play a bit nicer on our storage.
Space quotas are still important to stop that noise.
Fair enough. Mm, true. Yeah, that has been handy. Mm. We actually had a one step forward, one step back with quotas. We're using, in a separate file system, a munged directory quotering system, because the version of XFS on Celeste 9 that we're using had a bug that meant a setgrd bit wasn't working properly. And so we're really looking forward to having Celeste 11 with new XFS, set directory quotas, it was all going to be wonderful. Then, of course, we're using DMF, which pulls the rug out from under that idea. So, oh well. And NetCDF files, which is our scientific data files, are going to work well with DMF, because we can instruct DMF to leave the first 64K or so on the system, and we have analysis tools which will interrogate just the headers of those files, which is very helpful for our modelers and scientists to just check out the beginning of a file before deciding whether they need to recover it from tape, which, as I've said, is not an issue at the moment, but down the track they'll pick that up as well. Off-site, keeping our data off-site, which is part of our data retention plans and protection, is still very important to us, so DM Silo is a tool that we'll use. Exactly how we're going to manage that is another one of our up-in-the-air issues. We've considered tweaking the hard delete period on files so that when they're off-site, they stay soft deleted for a long, long time. We've also considered things like even when DM Silo is requesting files to come back, that we just leave them off-site for a lot longer, meaning we technically have our data blocks off-site and our backups are on those tapes, on matching tapes, but that all still felt pretty inelegant. And would require quite a lot of manual work if we wanted to bring those files back online. So we come up with what we thought was a pretty good solution. Three tape pools in DMF, one for normal on-site operations, one for off-site, you know, sending off-site at every weekly rotation, and then another set of tapes designed for when the off-site tapes are due for merging. If there's a tape that needs merging, there's a copy that the third set is also off-site. We bring one back on-site, have it merged, send it off again, and then do the same with the third set. It looked like it was going to work, and Sashil responded saying, yes, that looks like a reasonably good idea, but here's one better. And he's come up with a system where we can actually just do the merging of the off-site tape without needing the tape itself. We can use data blocks that are already on the system using the volume, one of the databases, one of the catalog databases. And so that's that looking like a pretty good option for us. Tier choices, we've made almost arbitrary decisions about size of the various tiers, SATA and fibre channel and tape. We've matched them to a certain extent from our existing file systems. Of course, there's significant differences to introducing tiers. I think what's probably going to happen is we'll tweak those settings as time goes on, introduce more tapes. We'll probably grow our tape tier much faster than any of our other tiers because we're hoping and trusting that all of our staff and ourselves included will be able to grasp the operating with DMF and learning from you guys from all the stuff I've heard yesterday and today about assisting workflows. Backup is a bit of a trouble for me at the moment. Our backup windows on our old system have gone to 60 or 70 hours, which is ridiculous. Moving into, we're using our Tempo Time Navigator at the moment with DMF, and the backup windows are much smaller, but we're uncertain about how, there's some details with how incremental backups work between two different tape sets, and so we've got some things to work through with our Tempo support there. Also, there's BAPIFS is a, it's the backup API that allows Tina to just write inodes out and so forth. It's not seem to work at the moment. So I think there's a bug or we've misconfigured something. So we'll work through that. The backup window is still a little large. So again, referring back to thresholds, it could be we need to do more migrations or possibly do some staging so that Tina is writing more just streams of data. I'm not sure. We'll see how that goes. I think it was Lachlan yesterday who mentioned that Tina and OpenVault don't play terribly well together. We've discovered that there's a process called STinit or QCSTinit that we've disabled in the Tina startup script, which seems to help with Tina start and playing nicely with OpenVault. We are going to face some changes in how we think about storage, how our staff thinks about storage. For example, all our space is now online. In the past, we sort of hid our free space on the SAN and only allocated LUNs when required, whereas now it's all visible to everybody. And people will become aware that in some senses it's a bottomless pit that gets migrated off to tape magically and it never ends. So we're probably going to have to introduce more project management and perhaps quotas, you know, various types of quotas. And also working with that storage, CXFS means that walking the file system is going to have to come to an end. We have a fair number of cron jobs that walk around scanning this and touching files and for our own purposes and also for some of our data manipulation staff, you might say. They do a lot of that, and so we're going to have to work with them to change their practices without hurting them too much. We're very pleased to note that capacity expansion is an order of magnitude lower in cost now, which nicely offsets our increasingly difficult budgetary arrangements. And growth is, while it's less flexible in the top tier, as I've described with LUNs, it looks like we're going to be mostly growing the tape tier. So that shouldn't be too much of a problem. And pure growth looks reasonably possible on the top tier anyway. It's just sort of rearrangement and manipulation that's a bit inflexible. And the very fact that any growth is now possible, granted via budgetary processes, is a wonderful relief because it stops us having to scrabble around for creative ideas for introducing, you know, random NAS boxes or USB hard drives to increase capacity temporarily. And backups, there'll be some changes, but there's some things that are still the same. We've got some concerns. We need to make sure we protect our data properly, and that's something I'm working on actively at the moment. Back to Perth next week for getting back into that. Just in case you're not sure, my baby is really cute. The future, we'll see our HPC cluster grow. Our HPC cluster connects directly to the new storage array now, which is a bonus. We had a dozen or so cores a few years ago. We're at about 100 now. I've heard rumours of a fourfold increase. So that's all looking pretty bright. We'll increase our tape capacity in DMF, which I think will harness its strengths even more. We need to invent a new archive system. And you heard me on the phone this morning, and I've been asking people frantically yesterday and today, tell me, how can I do archiving? So we need to work at how to archive our data to either suit the needs that we've already decided upon or work out that perhaps our needs can change a little, which we're hesitant to do. We also need to learn how to use the system and maintain and administer it, which I'm coming up to speed, but the other sysadmins will need to learn that as well, because I'm really keen that to not be the silent secret silo of information, because I may be run over by a bus. So that's documentation and training, and we may run some seminars for people who are most closely tied to the data. We're looking forward to SGI providing more good support. And in fact, as I wrote this presentation, I got an email from Sushil telling me about another issue that's thankfully not as critical as the CXFS bug, but he included a fix for the issue as well. So I'll get to that when I get back to Perth. And an idea from Rob yesterday, Rob Mollard, keeping stats and possibly ramping up log levels or keeping stats, you know, dragging stats off into another box for analysis and charts and whatnot, seems like a pretty good idea for marketing and justification for our existence and so forth. And finally, I'll be getting input from you guys here this week, and generally on the mailing list. I've been really pleased with the active mailing list, and I'll be certainly pinging you some more for help with all of this. Archive and backup are the two issues that are still foremost in our minds. So, thanks for having me here today.